Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I have a treat for you today. I am interviewing two guests who are about to come to Vashon on September 15th to present a movie that they've made at the Vashon Theater. And the title, which I absolutely adore, is called Rebel with a Clause. And in case you can't figure it out because you're not seeing the word C-L-A-U-S-E, this is a film about grammar. Now you can ask, okay, I'm going to go to an hour and a half film about grammar. What's the deal? But I can tell you, because I've watched a lot of that film, it is completely delightful because there is a backstory to it that I think you're going to love. And today I have an opportunity to talk to the star of the film, Ellen Jovin, and the producer-director, her husband, Brant Johnson, who are here with me to talk a little bit about the film, their process, and why we might all be fascinated by a movie about grammar. So thank you, guys. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Sally.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, there's a genre that I totally adore that I think is so pertinent in today's world where we have so much fragmentation. People aren't always talking to each other. We went through that whole pandemic where people couldn't really communicate. And we're often divided. But there are these little attempts to actually get people talking together. And I happen to love David Isay from StoryCorps, who went out into the world and started inviting people to tell their stories. And StoryCorps has become a big deal thing. But it started with people who are strangers just being willing to share their story. And another woman I adore, Wendy McNaughton, is an illustrator who sets up tables and gets people to draw together. And Wendy is total inspiration. But now I'm adding Ellen to my list because she set up a different kind of operation. She walked out of her Manhattan apartment and set up a grammar table. Now, you probably have never seen a grammar table before, but Ellen brought out her books, her sign, and invited people to come up to her with their questions or comments about grammar in Midtown Manhattan. I mean, this is phenomenal. And then so many people showed interest in this particular table that it escalated, and news media picked it up. And before she knew, Ellen went on the road to what turned out to be all 50 states where she would set up her grammar table and invite people from all walks of life, strangers she had never met, to come up and ask questions about grammar and just talk. And the results were delightful. And so in the movie, not only will you pick up a few points about grammar, which you probably haven't thought about for a while, but you'll hear the magic of strangers talking together. And I think that is a really important thing. So congratulations. I think, guys, it's a phenomenal project.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's jump in. What got you into this? Ellen, when I looked on Amazon to find out a little about you, it looked like you had a background writing and you'd written a couple of other books about the English language, but they didn't sound quite as fun as Rebel with a Clause. Yeah. So what was your background?
Originally, I was more of a, just to take it back to the beginning briefly, originally I was more of a math science kind of person, but in college I switched my major from applied math to German studies in my junior year, and ended up going to graduate school in comparative literature. And I just have always really loved the art of language, the science of language. I've loved language learning, grammar, usage. I collect usage books, read them for fun, that kind of thing. So my whole life has really been either writing or teaching writing, I've taught a lot of grammar classes. Brant and I have a company together called Syntaxis, and we do communication skills training for clients, to often large organizations. So that was my that's been kind of my life. And the table happened because I found myself spending so much time in my online language nerd groups. You know, Facebook came along, you could join a German group, a French group, a Spanish group, polyglot group. And I was just spending so much time online. I was blogging about language, and I just wanted to be out in the world again and talk to human beings more and use language in an applied way, to enjoy connection.
Wow. And so, I mean, it's a big step to go from talking with language nerds on Facebook and different online platforms and actually having the nerve to set up a table near your apartment and talk with strangers. Are you like a born extrovert that can talk with anybody, or did you kind of have to ease into that through through the table?
I'm not actually sure. Do you think I'm an extrovert? I don't know if I'm an extrovert, but I do like talking to people. I've always liked talking to people. I was quiet maybe until around age 14, and then, for a brief, actually only for a brief period in adolescence, just going through the whole puberty thing, and then it was all over. I think I've been a talker since then, but a listener talker. I really enjoy hearing what people have to say. So that I think is a very important quality of the experience at the grammar table. I want to answer the questions people have, not impose my own on them.
I love that. And then, I know that we're only seeing a small sample of all the conversations that you had, but I loved how people wanted to share with you. And it felt like sometimes they were sharing, a grammar question, but they were kind of engaging with their life with you. And I loved seeing how the conversations just kind of rolled forward. Did you have to Were all the conversations that great, or was it like a small sample that you took for the movie?
Well, I can tell you, I shot 400 hours of footage
Oh my
and
gosh.
selected 86 minutes for the film. So it was 6 years of editing
Oh my
that
gosh.
I did on that mountain of footage. There was a lot of wonderful material that I did not include in the film and that I feel sad about. That boy, there's really great stuff, but not all of it was scintillating, and there were some of it was a little less entertaining or engaging or moving, but a lot of it was really compelling.
To think of it, it's true. There are things that maybe aren't as scintillating, and occasionally people, because I'm trapped at a table with heavy books on it, they exploit that to their advantage and just talk at me for a long time. I try in those moments to think about why that's happening and just kind of relax into it and learn something from the experience of, like, why does this person want to tell me the details of the last 10 years of their life? There's something in that that I can enjoy even in the moment where I think, well, it would be nice to go be able to get a coffee right now.
Oh, one thing that struck me watching you at the table was how generous you were with your listening. I could see people lighting up. I could see them feeling good. I could see them feeling heard. And it was the quality of that interaction that really gave the film its spark for me. I like the topic. I actually am pretty interested in grammar, although I don't think about it all the time. But it was the people to people piece that was so cool, including, and I haven't seen the whole film, but I remember you were talking to someone who was dragging a sleeping bag behind her, and she truly looked like she was unhoused or unhomed, or however we talk about that. Was that your sense of her as she dragged her blue sleeping bag across the street? And I thought, yeah, even she could come up and have a conversation with you, and you actually engaged on something that was real. And then she,
Maybe that's, yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't,
no, no, and then
maybe
she
that.
dragged her blue sleeping bag off into the horizon, you know?
Maybe that is, that aspect of it is, I think, maybe it's something that I didn't necessarily think of when I first set up the table. I mean, I do love language for the sake of, among other things, for the sake of human connection, but I think I probably did at the outset envision a somewhat narrower band of activities where I really would just answer people's grammar questions, and it would be fun because I would enjoy it, and it would include discussions of other languages. But I think that that's probably the depth of that is why also you, Brant, started filming.
Yeah, for sure. And Sally, I love what you said about the people, and that this is really what engages you are the people in the film. Ellen, of course, but not it, this isn't a movie about Ellen alone. It is who's on the other side of the table, and what is their experience? And you'll notice in the opening credits, it's a film by Brant Johnson starring Ellen Jovin, starring the people.
And you had a whole list in the credits. You gave a credit to so many people. How was that? Did you have to get a, like, how was it? You're talking to somebody, but there's that little messy part of, is it okay if we film you? And if we use it, can we use it? And usually there's a sign off on that. That didn't impair the conversation. It didn't make people slightly awkward to know that they were being filmed.
Well, whether or not we had a conversation about it, it was clear from my cameras and the microphones that they were being filmed. So that was no surprise when we got time to sign a document. So that conversation typically happened, basically always happened at the end. So we would have whatever interaction we have unimpeded by, oh, legal this, or we're gonna do this, and just have the conversation at the end. Would you be willing to allow us to use that footage in the film? And almost everyone was happy to, because the conversations weren't some sort of gotcha, we're doing some sort of grammar correction and you're wrong and here's another example of it kind of thing ever. And
Yeah,
they
no, I can imagine because I like some of the political comedies and stuff like the old Daily Show and things like that. And there was a lot of gotcha comedy where somebody was, saying something into a camera and not knowing that it was about to be twisted around, like how silly people are or whatever. But that wasn't the tone of yours at all.
No, not a, that was a critical element for me, just to set the tone of the piece and how the people were represented in the film in a kind, open way, the way Ellen is kind and open and respectful. And I want to just clarify one thing. The list of people at the end, those are not the people in the film.
Oh, I
Those are
didn't know that.
people that offered advice or came to a
Okay.
screening. We had a rough cut screening early
I
on, and
see.
people gave feedback. And so, but I did not actually list the names of the people in the
I got
film.
that. That
They're
makes sense to protect
anonymous.
privacy. Yeah, that does make sense. Well, Brant, this was a like a mega project, 6 years of work and 400 hours of shooting. Oh my God, how did you decide to tackle it? What led you into it? And tell me a little bit about your background, because you'd done some work before, but this sounds like the most major piece of producing, directing that,
For sure, this is my feature film debut, and what brought me into it was just sitting around the grammar table. So I would be in a park bench nearby in the early days of Ellen's setting up her grammar table, and I would just hang around and see what was going
He
on.
was a grammar loiterer.
It's a grammar loiterer. And what I was seeing was so hilarious, so heartfelt. And we were in the midst, that was late 2018, we're in the midst of a very divided time, socially and politically, as we are now. And it was an oasis of connection and unity and fun that was so compelling. I thought I need to start filming. And I had written and produced several plays prior to that and a comedy web series, and had so some adjacent sort of experience of conveying ideas, but this was a very different thing, and I didn't really plan for what was coming. I really didn't have an idea of how much it was going to consume my life for the
I
coming
would
years.
think because often on a documentary, I mean, even a small one, you have a director, a videographer, a producer, these multiple roles, but it sounds like you had to do a lot of all of that to as well as probably an editor in the when the film went into post-production. So did you have four bodies?
I feel like I would have benefited from four bodies
It's
at
kind of
times.
it's actually really shocking to me what he did, that he edited the whole thing on top of doing every single other thing in the field. Was just like, it's mind-boggling to me, and an example of what good taste I have in men, because I picked someone who had that capacity and fortitude. I mean, if I had encountered one teeny fraction of the obstacles that he had to overcome to learn how to do this and to actually make it happen, I would have just been like, I'm just going to keep sitting on the street, conjugating verbs at the grammar table, and that's going to be it. It'll just be a local, little thing. But fortunately, in 1994, I saw him, and we've been together ever since.
Yeah, good taste, good choice
Thank you.
there. Yeah.
Actually, I have a correction. I saw her first. He
Were
walked
you
into the room
really?
with,
There's no
and I saw.
documentation one way or the other.
Yeah, that's right. Were you both living in New York at the time when you met?
Yes, our friend had tried to set us up the year before, and we said no.
Interesting. Well, first, I want to go back to Brant and say I have a friend here on the island who did a documentary about the poet James Broughton, and I know that a big part of what he had to do was raise money and also try and break into the independent film scene in order to get viewings for the film. And it wasn't easy. He ended up doing a great job, but how was that for you? Did you have to spend long hours trying to raise money and figure out how you were going to be screened?
Well, early on, as we started off in the traveling journeys, the traveling road trip docu-comedy fun, Ellen had already at that stage been talking to a publisher about a book. So there wasn't a book in the works early on when she started grammar tabling, but Ellen got a book advance for that. And we also have a communication skills consulting firm. So we were able to continue that business between trips. We would do a loop around in one part of the country and come back and do some of the corporate work and then do another loop around, a loop around. So
And since we're married, we saved on hotel costs.
that's right. That's right. But
Yeah.
at the very end of the process,
Yeah.
the finishing process where the final color and sound and music comes together. We also had donors who contributed at the very end.
Because it's a very professionally done, the color, the photography is great, it
Thank you.
feels really good. I love how you incorporated music. And so I'm saying to myself, just out of my experience with other documentary filmmakers, boy, all that costs money,
It does
And
indeed.
yeah, so congratulations for pulling all that off.
Thank
That's
you.
a really big deal.
Thank you.
Going back to, well, let me ask two questions. One's about grammar, but also one's about the your time on the road. You're living in Manhattan. You're living on, is it the Upper West Side of Manhattan
Yes.
where you live? Yeah. Going to Arkansas is a whole different world, and yet you fluidly went to these places that a lot of people from Manhattan don't travel to. And I'm sure people in Arkansas have a view of people from Manhattan. People in Manhattan have a view from people Arkansas. I saw you connecting, but did you? Yeah, what was that like? Going from a sort of alien world into another world.
We were hardcore, all right, maybe not hardcore, but we were road trippers before anything grammary happened. So we had already driven across the country twice before on our own and gone to states that it is true, a lot of people in Manhattan don't really think of spending a lot of time in. Like that felt important to us and fun. We went to small towns. We've been to Nebraska multiple times, just as an example. I love going to Nebraska. And so that part of it was already institutionalized in our relationship. I think all places are worthwhile. You meet wonderful people everywhere, and the differences for me pale in comparison to the with the commonalities. And I also was very excited to spend more time in the South because I think we, each of us had already been to 40 something states. They weren't exactly the same states, but they overlapped a lot. But the ones that we were missing the most of, I think, were principally in the South. Like I had never been to Louisiana. I'd barely been to Alabama, and I loved our time in Alabama.
Wow. There was one question. I remember somebody was looking for the punctuation for y'all, you know? I love that question. I love that.
There's a lot of passion about
Yeah. Well, where did you feel, what was the most exciting topic that you ran into in the world of grammar or the most controversial? You know, I saw a little bit of debate around the Oxford comma, which always gets people riled up. And, you know, do you have a sequence of words with the comma before the and, you know, and I'm sure you'll explain Oxford comma better in your film, but what were there things that, yeah, the people seem to be flummoxed by?
Well, some of the more complicated grammar topics are a little more difficult to dramatize, I mean, I love talking about things like restrictive and non-restrictive, appositives and relative clauses, but that's a difference between the which clause and the that clause, how you punctuate, for example, my neighbor, Wendy Jones. Always shows up late. Whether my neighbor and Wendy Jones are the same person, do you put commas around Wendy Jones or not? Like that discussion is really a lot of fun. Some of them are, they get complicated. So the Oxford comma I would describe as a cheap and easy thrill. I've never said it that way before, but it does, it's like people sometimes go running by the table. They don't have to stop. They don't have time for that stuff, but they say, they're like Oxford comma or die or Oxford comma forever, whatever it is. They're very, very passionate about that.
That was for sure the topic that came up more than any other topic by far, not even close. Oxford comma everywhere. Oxford comma, Oxford comma.
And just so that people know, because until I started editing my book, I didn't know the whole controversy around the Oxford comma, but there are different style guides out there. And apparently Chicago has one version of, they promote the Oxford comma, and the American Psychological Association has another style guide, which doesn't. Is that, am I right there? You know.
I don't remember about APAs, so that's the APA style guide. That's the one I use the least, that second one you mentioned. I use that the least. The AP, the
Oh,
Associated
maybe
Press
it was
style
the
guide.
AP because you were
Okay.
referring to it in the movie.
Yeah. I would have guessed the APA does recommend the Oxford comma, but I really there I find yeah. But
But it,
AP says don't use it unless you need it for clarity.
yeah. So again, you know, you can kind of say to people, you're all right, but people have their strong points of view. So in a certain way, it's kind of fun to have people excited about grammar, you know?
Absolutely, because having a debate about something and having it not end in blows or just, real acrimony, I think there's a therapeutic bonding component of that. It's good to have debate and just it's like a process people go through. Like there's a catharsis that comes out and, maybe they don't agree in the end, but it doesn't feel like it's the end of a relationship, whether someone uses an Oxford comma or not.
That's right. And it's also a piece of what I thought you were doing was bringing grammar back to the people. Because in a sense, grammar has come out of the people. It hasn't just come out of the ivory towers of, you know, Oxford or Cambridge. It
So
evolves.
true. That is so true. I love what you're saying about that. And that I think also maybe sometimes people who don't stop at the grammar table think that is not my point of view. They think that I'll be there with a ruler telling them that they have to follow some set of guidelines that and they think of that as the collection of what grammar is. But it's an organic, like it's a changing, roiling, just it's a fascinating set of habits that we have that vary around the world and negotiating the differences across generations and dialects, that is just a whole lot of fun from my point of view.
Totally, totally. And I love that because you had one scene with this, I think it was at some kind of conference or convention with a He looked like a grammarian. It was somebody in a, looked like almost a tux, white and very formal. And he kind of represented our picture of the effete intellectual expert on grammar. I don't really know if he was or not, but that's kind of the image. And it was so distinct from the kind of guy on the street talking about grammar that showed up so
Yeah.
often in your film.
Well, it's very important to me to show up for all grammar occasions properly attired. For that,
Oh.
for me, that means I have a substantial collection of grammar-themed T-shirts, but none of them say I am silently correcting your grammar because no one would come talk. First of all, that is just to me. This is like it's a moral principle in part. You have to be kind to people. And it's not that I've never heard someone say something and said, okay, I would edit that, if it were coming out of my mouth. But it's a lot of the people who are chronic correctors of others are actually often incorrect about their beliefs. I find the people that have devote great passion to writing me emails where they complain about some particular vice of a newscaster or whatever. It's really something that's a gray area or debatable, or they may have misremembered it. And then at the same time, they commit what are just obvious grammatical errors in the email where they're writing to complain about the other. So I think it's important for the complaining people to ask themselves, am I right? And if they are right, is there actually a good reason to be doing the correcting that they're doing? Or could it
Yeah.
be better spent on other things like baking cupcakes?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that, my beat is often talking to adults, usually over 50, about what are the messages that they're carrying that are inhibiting them from doing the things that they want to do. And grammar, in a certain way, is one of those messages that you can almost picture it and you can see the grade on your paper with all the red marks on it. And that becomes grammar, you know what I mean? And so you go into writing, and all of a sudden, are the grammar police lurking that I really can't write in my own language and the grammar police are going to come in? Well, no, and now there are workarounds, but I do think we have those kinds of messages and stuff,
Well, absolutely. And people sometimes are mean about grammar. I mean, they just are really mean. But I hope if anyone is traumatized by something that someone has said to them, they will remember, if they've heard this, they will remember that I don't support that. And they can always send me a message if they want a little comfort.
or
But I think what
watch the movie and see how you laugh. It'll make them feel
Yeah,
so
no.
much better. We don't have to take this all like it's, life or death seriousness. Brant,
Absolutely.
I
Right. Yep.
interrupted. Yeah. You.
No, Sally, I love this idea that you're touching on about how people can feel they see the red marks, so they feel inhibited in their way they express themselves out of fear of, someone said that was wrong, and should I, and I can't. And I think such an important part of being able to reach people and express oneself is a willingness to take risks, a willingness to make mistakes, and just put your ideas out there so they reach other people. And maybe they're perfect, maybe they're not, but you're there and they're getting where you want them to go.
Yeah, and there's a lot of forgiving of grammar mistakes if it comes along with heartfelt thinking, if people have
Yes.
really put themselves out, which leads to one question I had, which is now in the world of AI, there are a lot of grammar options for people to just run their text and get their grammar checked by AI. What do you think of that? Is that going to both advance us and deprive us of some relationship to grammar because you can just run your script through one of these programs?
Consider myself particularly knowledgeable about AI, although I use it for a certain I use it for my tech support. Well, it's very effective for that, but I don't go anywhere near my text with it because the autonomy of individual expression is just, I feel like it's central to every aspect of what matters to me in my life. And I can't imagine relinquishing power over my voice. And that's what I feel is happening to people who are relying increasingly on AI. I think it is it provides a lot of great advice. Grammar checkers and other forms of technology provide a lot of great advice about grammar. Also sometimes some pretty bad advice, but they can fix a lot of the things that in writing for people get in their way of succeeding professionally. I mean, there are lots of people in very technical professions who can use it to help, you know, with challenging English grammar issues. And I think that's a plus, but okay, and now I'm just rambling here. It makes me feel almost nauseated, the idea of people outsourcing their voice.
Yeah, well, I think it's a fine line between outsourcing your voice, and we get pretty close to that, and outsourcing your grammar. And I know, because I've run text through Grammarly or some of these programs, that I'm trying to hold on to that cord called teach me about grammar. So if I make a mistake, I want to know why, or I want to see the repeating patterns in the things that are corrected, but I want to be able to own that knowledge. So I'm not dependent on running it through the text, because I see it's like people say kids can't do arithmetic anymore. And I know how easy it is to pull out the calculator, you know, or a little phone and do your math that way, and gradually lose the capacity to think numbers. And so it would seem to me that's a bit of a risk, that there's something empowering about knowing your own grammar, you know, that we could be at risk of losing. Plus, then they couldn't have the fun conversations with you.
I mean, I think sometimes people ask me if I think that stuff is going to make the grammar table irrelevant. And because it's really not just about grammar, I that doesn't even concern me at all. That for me is not an issue. I know what I was going to say. Also for translation types of functions, technology gets better and better. But there's something about having the knowledge in your head of being able to produce without a machine words in Spanish or Italian or Ukrainian or whatever it is to people who speak those languages, that I think that's a reward that every young person should experience in school. It's like a transforming experience to understand that sounds in another culture are used differently to compose words that have meanings. You know, it just makes the world so much bigger to know that and to have that physical experience of producing a sentence in, say, Spanish. So I hope that the language requirements stick around so that people can have that.
Yeah, and me too. Go ahead.
You can see in the film instances where Ellen addresses someone in their native language. It's a wonderful thing for a person to be able to do, to be able to produce that, but the effect it has on the person you're doing it with is remarkable. There's a scene where Ellen speaks Spanish to a native Spanish speaker, and his face just lights up, and it's like, wow, and the connection is immediate. She speaks Dutch, just a few words to a Dutch person. She was delighted. So what that can do to connecting people and showing an outward perspective that Ellen has, this outward curiosity, connection, respect for people, acknowledgement of their different backgrounds, their different language facilities, their different familiarities with different languages. And that, I think that's a beautiful element of Ellen and what is portrayed about
and
her.
And I love that. And that's, again, another reason to watch the film and be inspired, that it is, you know, it's in part about grammar, but it's also in part about how we talk to each other. And what happens when people connect? Is there a question? I'm going to ask you about Vashon in just a moment. But before I do, is there a question that you'd like to answer that I haven't asked you yet?
I don't think so for me. What about for you? Oh, should we? Well, I think it's one thing that I think is kind of interesting. People wonder about whether we get we have negative encounters. And over the course of our time in 50 states, we had almost none. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One, because we picked good spots, you know, where we would be likely to have good experiences. But I also just think that there's something about a grammar table sign that makes people behave.
Well,
Yeah,
you're not.
But not in a scary way. Not in a scary way. Like it's just sort of a focus. And I think getting people off of trying to solve every big issue all at once, just giving them something with a focus where they can say, hey, yeah, I was wondering about that piece of punctuation the other week, and let's just talk about that. Let's not talk about how we all have to get along. Let's not talk about how we solve all the big problems of the world. Let's remember and focus on a detail that we can negotiate in peace and with humor. And that's relaxing. So I think that is part of why almost nothing nothing unpleasant happened in our travels.
I have one other question.
Yes.
A Sally question.
Uh-huh.
You might have asked us, or just a question that I would like to answer. And that is, did you and Ellen actually get along over all of those travels? And it seems like it got along pretty well, but that was a pretty narrow little
do we need to let you ask that question, or
I'm giving you carte blanche to ask your own question.
Okay.
And give your own answer. Yeah,
I just want to make sure we are setting this up for you, because I wasn't sure. Okay. I did either. Okay.
So I did include a scene in Santa Fe where we're getting into an elevator and Ellen expresses her being a bit frustrated with me. But overall, the answer is yes, this was so much fun. And I'll speak for myself, just being with Ellen is just a lot of fun, just consistently. And it, so I feel
he's legally obligated to say
I feel
that.
As though we are tumbling.
I have to give a reality check for people who can't see your faces. They look genuinely happy. They look happy with each other. You know, trust me on this one. Yes. Do you have a next project that you're thinking about that will keep you collaborating like this? I know you have a company together, but I was just wondering if there's any follow-on to this project.
Well, the follow-on is continuing, interestingly, with the film and having screenings all over the country. So the Grammar Table project itself was going to all 50 states. And now with the film release, we're going all over the place, and it's continuing the road trip in another form and still building community in places where we land and people come see the film and the Grammar Table is there and we talk about the film and the project. So that's going to continue for the foreseeable future. We have well over 100 screenings scheduled right now, and they just keep getting scheduled more and more all the time. So it's a wonderful sort of continuation of the similar theme of the table itself with the movie screenings.
How fun. Will you be doing a Q&A when you come to Vashon?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the book signing, and I'll set up the Grammar Table.
How fun. Well, I don't know if you know much about our island or our theater, but I'll just give you a little bit. We have an independent movie theater, like the old style movie theater with a person behind it, actually a couple of family that picks movies and supports the community. And so great story. Some years ago, when the movie theater had to go digital and couldn't afford it because there's a lot of money given, you know, we're a small-ish community. Donors in the community came forward and bought the equipment so that the movie theater could live on, because there was something because movie theater really is at the heart of Vashon, and we love our movie theater. So it's it draws community and it brings us together. And shout out to the owners of the Vashon Movie Theater. You are wonderful, but also because it's a venue where you're not having to do in a fiveplex and try and figure out which of the plexes you can get into. You know, you're going to be dead in the heart of Vashon. And we're also a community where I think your message will be super well received. People are curious and engaged and often educated, and it's a really great community, our little town.
Well, that was my sense when I got the first email from the island about showing the movie there. We also are extremely excited about just going to islands generally. It's fun. It's just fun to go to islands. But I'm really curious to see what it's like. And it was very clear to me that the theater was an institution that builds community, and that's an important value to us in all that we're doing now.
And that's a beautiful description of it that you gave, Sally.
Yeah.
It's really, yes. So we really, really can't wait. We're looking forward to it so much.
So are you going to be setting up your Grammar Table before the showing, or how is this all going to work so that people can connect with you?
Well, I think it's still slightly under development, but what I think is going to happen is that I'll show up at the theater about an hour beforehand with the table and be there to answer grammar questions, take grammar complaints, listen to grammar tales of trauma. It's possible there will be a non-mandatory grammar quiz that people can take. And Brant and I will just be there. Shoot, this will definitely happen. I mean, we'll be there at the very least before the show to shoot the breeze with people and just have fun. And then I'll also have copies of my book with me.
And we'll have an official Q&A post screening.
Yeah, it will be a grammar party, basically.
Yeah.
It sounds great. You know, you haven't had this moniker, but you know, I could just see free grammar therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
I think this is a delightful and just a wonderful project. And the fact that you're going to be with us, I mean, it's fun for people. And at some point, they'll probably be able to stream you if they can't get to the theater. Is that right? At some point, you'll
That's
be streaming
at some point. That's not in the immediate plans. We're continuing with the theatrical
the Love
release,
Theater.
but
So good. This is like you have to go to a real movie theater to watch real people having real
yeah.
conversations and being human together. This is
Yeah.
really great. So I invite all of Vashon to come out on September 15th to visit the grammar table, get a little grammar therapy, meet the hosts, and buy some books. So it's been wonderful to talk to you, and I look forward to the event.
Thank you, Sally.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.